I'm too old for this.
Okay, so in the spirit of Christmas, we're doing our little Christmas podcast today, and we're going to talk about Lethal Weapon 1, which takes place in Christmas, kind of pointlessly. It's another one of those many movies that kind of has Christmas as a backdrop, and it really is never very relevant that it's Christmas. Die Hard 1 is the same thing, though it does justify him being brought to the Nakatomi building and all that.
And the Christmas party.
Yeah, well, that's basically all there's to it. But in this, it's almost completely irrelevant. And it's like, they only remind you about it a couple of times. And I honestly don't know what the point
is. I'm thinking maybe it had something to do with release dates.
It might have. I don't know when it was released. I could look it up, but
it'd be really... I'm pretty sure Die Hard probably was, because I remember Die Hard 2. Remember going to see that with my dad at Christmas time, so...
I do remember going to see the theater. I don't feel like it was Christmas time. Maybe it was. Maybe it was like November or something like that.
Yeah, it was around... Shit like that always comes out around Thanksgiving.
That's true. So, this is 1987. So, kind of... Well, this is actually older than Running Scared, isn't it?
Was that 88?
No, I think Running Scared was 86.
Oh, okay.
I think Running Scared beat it for the buddy cop thing.
Well, really, the first big buddy cop thing, which we already discussed, they're not both cops, but it was 48 Hours, and I think that was a big success. And then you had, Eddie Murphy, I think, really got it going.
Yeah.
Because then he did that, and then he did Beverly Hills Cop, and I think they both made a lot of money.
So. That's true. So,
but this wasn't so much of a comedy.
No, the first one really isn't. The second one is got more comedic elements. This one has a couple of really funny lines in it here and there, but other
God,
than that,
like God hates me. That always gives me so
hate him back works for me.
That was pretty cynical. He's got the crazy eyes too.
Yeah, the crazy eyes. There's some cynical stuff, but there's just a couple actual funny bits too. You know, like this funny lines from Gibson's character. This one's pretty good, but I think I prefer the second one, just like with the Beverly Hills again.
The second one was good.
I think that there was more to going on with the character interaction in the second one that I liked, and I felt that the increase in the comedy was a little better. I don't know. I just like the second one better.
It was still...
It had a better plot. It had a better, more cohesive, sensible storyline. It was still something ridiculous, like these South African guys smuggling cougarans for whatever. But this one, it's like part of the plot was left on the cutting room floor or something, because the McAllister ex-Vietnam mercenary group is running heroin in, and you get all that kind of quickly in one big burst of, you know, exposition. But then to connect all the pieces and you know, connect all the dots, it's kind of convoluted.
Well, it's more trying to be an action movie, I think.
Well, yeah, it's definitely trying to be an action movie, but the...
Because a movie like this, I think, you could string it out at least 2 hours.
Yeah, and it's an 80s movie, so it keeps it under two. I think it's like about an hour 40 or something like that. And that's the director's cut, which has a couple of extra scenes, including the one in the children's school.
Yeah, so maybe there was probably an extra 10 minutes of footage.
Seems like it. There was a couple extra scenes to sort of reemphasize Riggs' living conditions and squalor of his situation. And then that one scene that first introduces Riggs as a police officer, which kind of comes out of nowhere, where he goes up and takes out the sniper at the killed children's school, which I guess
that was definitely a bit much.
Yeah, it was a bit much, and it was probably also kind of controversial for its time. And I mean, you know, now it's the sort of thing they would never show because of all school shooting stuff is so taboo that to just throw it in there is kind of like they do.
Well, I think it was probably
they treat it very
I know things like that had happened because that's really what got the assault weapon legislation going in the late 80s, early 90s, which resulted in the Brady Bill in 94, which banned assault weapons nationwide for 10 years.
Anywho, so Detective Riggs, Sergeant Murtaugh, Murtaugh's 50th birthday. He's too old for this shit at the beginning of Lethal Weapon 1, everybody. Just so you know. 50
is getting old.
50 is getting old. And big old family. You juxtapose his world with the, which is a son and two daughters, one who's a teenager and one who's, you know, a little younger. And a wife and a cat and all that. And a, you know, whole
Burbank.
And then you got Riggs on the beach living it up Rockford style. Bachelor with a dog.
Well, you kind of get the feeling that it's for temporary.
Watching TV. Except you kind of don't. You kind of get the feeling he doesn't care anymore, really, is what you get.
Well, I mean that it's... Right, exactly.
That it's new. It's yeah, exactly. And then you see the picture of his wife, and you kind of know, and you know he's sad, and so you get the sense, okay, yeah, his wife is dead. They never get into his wife being murdered or anything. That's all stuff that they add in the second one.
Well, he didn't know his wife had been murdered.
Yeah, they add that all in the second one.
Which does make sense because he worked in narcotics at the beginning of the movie.
That's right, he did, huh? And then he kind of got transferred over to just general homicide or something.
Robbery, homicide.
After the incident at the Christmas tree farm, like, I guess it just kind of, everyone was like, you know what, we don't want you on narc anymore. You're too much of a loose cannon, Riggs.
What's that from?
I don't know, from nothing.
From Loose Cannons from with Gene Hackman and Dan Aykroyd.
I'd love to see that movie again.
I honestly haven't seen that since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like when I was on HBO.
I think we should try and look for Loose Cannons again.
And then there was that great one with Dabney Coleman, who thinks he's dying.
Yes, that one was good.
That one was
Dabney Coleman, for sure. Man, there are so many great cop movies.
There were so many great 80s Dabney Coleman movies.
There were, well, let's see, there was that, and then there was 9 to 5, and War Games.
And Cloak and Dagger.
And Cloak and Dagger. That's right. How come there aren't like a lot more people that are named Dabney is what I want to know.
I don't know. I don't even know what that is. Is that like Czech or something?
I have no idea what that is. It's probably Irish.
Yeah, Dabney. Coleman. These do good old-fashioned hangings.
What are you going to do?
That's what California did before the gas chamber. Again, History Channel... At Folsom Prison, before they installed the gas chamber at San Quentin.
It's a way to do it.
Well, why shit? We must have switched again, what, in the 80s? To lethal injection.
Probably, yeah.
Which is what pretty much everybody is now, I think.
Probably.
Places like Utah, I think, still offer firing squad. I think some prisoners get a choice of how they want to be executed.
They come in with like a full color brochure and they lay it out. They open up the panels.
I'd rather be shot than lethal and the gas.
You'd rather have like it hits you in the kidney and then it hits you in the and then you slump down and you bleed to death for like 5 minutes.
We get shot by like 6 or 7 high powered rifles and they're all. You're getting your heart basically explodes. You die almost instantly.
I'm not sure. I guess it would depend on what crime I committed. Like if I was a child murderer, I'd want a different kind of death penalty than like say if I accidentally killed somebody and then was framed. You know, I'd want hanging if it was unjust.
So if you accidentally, how do you get framed for accidentally killing somebody?
I don't know. What happens? If I were framed for a murder,
well, if I accidentally killed somebody,
if my death penalty was unjust, I would want to be hanging.
Do you want to be eye for an eye?
I want to be hanging.
So if you were like sodomizing little boys and then slitting their throats, that's what should happen to you. I almost got War Games the other day.
War Games is boring. Speaking of Joshua, Mr. Joshua, played by Gary Busey in Lethal Weapon 1. Yeah, Joshua was the name of the computer.
Oh, right. Joshua. The guy's kid.
That guy was Joshua. Cool.
What the hell is his name?
I don't know.
I think that was the same dude from The Omen.
Maybe. No, it wasn't. The Omen guy was, I don't know, he was in a bunch of Star Trek movies and stuff. His name is an easy name. I'm just not ringing a bell with it right now. But anyway, so Busey's in this. McAllister's in this. That's Greg's dad from Dharma and Greg. He plays the General McAllister.
Tom.
Tom who gives a shit.
Tom Atkins, and then his name is like Michael... Oh, shit.
What are you talking about?
Oh, Tom Atkins.
Yeah.
He played Hunt Sacker.
Yeah, he did.
Who was in Escape from New York, which I watched the other day for the first time.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I was surprised. Lee Van Cleef, especially, he was pretty cool.
You should have waited when we could have a podcast about that.
I thought you already did.
I don't think we did, though.
Did you do one for Escape from L.A.?
No, I don't know. We mainly did newer stuff or just sort of thematic stuff. So we talked about Lethal Weapon a little before, but we've never really just tried to sit down and actually focus on what's going on.
Well, isn't Zach sort of a horror movie buff?
He likes a decent bit of that stuff, so we'll talk about that every now and again.
I keep trying to get him into something because I definitely dig the horror movies. Because I used to go and I just rented lots and lots of horror movies. That's how I came across Pumpkinhead. And lots of other classics with Lance Henriksen. Mm-hmm. Henriksen. That was Stan Winston, too.
Yeah, he directed that, actually.
And come to think of it, the special effects, the actual Pumpkinhead dude...
Yeah, it was pretty
was
good.
Was pretty
The first
good.
One, the first one, it's good. And the second one, it's terrible.
I haven't seen the second one.
His digits can't even articulate. So Pumpkinhead goes to pick up this guy named Ernst. This guy named Ernst goes outside, and he's like, "Oh, Lord, give me strength," because he knows, like, he can smell it in the air or something, that Pumpkinhead's coming. And so Pumpkinhead later shows up, and Pumpkinhead's like, "Ah," and Ernst is like, "No," and Pumpkinhead picks up Ernst by the head without articulating any of his fingers. He just goes like smashes his hands together, his open hands, and then picks Ernst up and like throws him into like a hook on the side of a barn.
Oh, nice.
But the point is, it's like, are you kidding me, Pumpkinhead? It's like they had Pumpkinhead arms on a stick and they put him next to Ernst's head, and that was supposed to be like the close-up shot of Pumpkinhead picking him up and throwing him.
You know what else was crazy?
It was disappointing. Roger Clinton was in Pumpkinhead too. That's how disappointing it was. So, yeah, I don't know. I just it's got some things like the endo shocking him and stuff is kind of weird. They're trying to find out what they know. What Riggs and Murtaugh know, what they found out about this heroin smuggling thing, and that sort of gives the whole motivation for the ending action sequences. And it makes some sense, but I don't know. Something about it, I have to say,
as a child, I never really gave the story a whole lot of thought.
Yeah, I neither did I, and now that I'm doing that, I'm kind of less enamored by the first one. I still like it as a movie, and I still think that some of the stuff that's going on with the characters is interesting, but like that fight scene at the end, which just like where literally like the cops are all there and there's like really no stakes left, you know, because it's like Riggs is essentially handicapped by like 30 of the LAPD that are right there if anything's gonna happen. I mean, and the fact that they're letting it go on and everything, it's a little too ridiculous.
For Mr. Joshua, it's a matter of pride.
Well, yeah, exactly. But the whole thing is, like, all they would have had to do to make this movie work a little better is just manipulate a few circumstances of the storyline, and it would have just worked a lot. Like, why does Mr. Joshua bother going back to Murtaugh's house? What's the logic there? He should, at that point, they're busted, and he should just go to the safe house.
The movie doesn't follow reality.
It really doesn't.
An 80s action movie, yeah. And they never did.
Well, some of them had a bit of logic, and this one, like you said,
what?
Well, other of them have just like you've been able to go okay, like boom, to boom. Yeah, exactly. Even that one flowed
that
pretty
makes
straightforward.
Sense.
Yeah, other than the fact that he got arrested like three times after being like shooting cops.
Well, they
and
finally
getting let
had
out.
To kill
yeah.
him
exactly
because they got justice.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, just minor things. Like if they had just instead found out about the safe house and that's where Mr. Joshua was and that's where the fight happened, that would have worked better, you know, than him going to the same. And McAllister goes out like a punk. It's sort of anticlimactic, I guess, is what I because the bad guys, you get the one scene with them early on in the movie where you show Mr. Joshua shows his loyalty with the arm being burned, and then they are not in the movie for like an hour. And then they come back at the very end, and it's kind of like, oh, okay, I guess there was this heroin deal being distributed through the... That scared the shit out of me.
Oh, telemarketing.
They don't even bother to say, hey, sorry,
well, it's automated.
Oh.
So the it doesn't click on.
Bullshit.
Every now and then I'll hear the beginning of one start and the answering machine cuts it off.
Nice.
Well, sometimes, you know, like the doctor's office or shit like that, or like when I got the call for my from the gun shop telling me my Beretta had sold. That was on the... But anyway, I always check my messages.
Cool. But yeah, I mean, it's just... The second one to me has like a more cohesive... It's still an 80s, ridiculous 80s action movie with him tying... tying a chain to his truck and dragging a house down the hill and all these... like crazy like South African bad guys and all that crap, but it still works. It's still like you can connect the dots pretty logically, and like the pacing is better and there's more with the bad guys from the beginning. And this one, it's like this thin, like they kind of chase a loose end about the prostitute.
Well,
and
we
the
can do pimp. Two at some point also.
Yeah, I saw two time? Like about an hour not too long ago, so
I think that's director's cut, too.
I think I own that version of two, and I think I maybe did notice one or two things that seemed like, hey, this seems different.
I can't remember now. It's been a while.
It just, you know, you see it on TV, you see it here and there, and you're always like, I don't remember this being this way. Or
that
whatever.
Chick was hot. I can only think of one other thing.
Patsy Kensit, the blonde, the blonde with the short hair that he banged. I'm sorry, you can't say that. Patsy Kensit was never a
She never was, but she could have been.
Like, in Living Daylights, maybe, is when that would have been, but it never happened. The acting is good. I like Glover and Riggs are both fantastic doing
Riggs
what they do.
Riggs is, I think my favorite is in this one, is just because Riggs is the craziest in the
Well, yeah, yeah, exactly. He's not really crazy at all in the second
he's
one.
He's just suicidal.
Yeah. Well, in the second one,
in the first one, he's suicidal.
In the second one, he gets angry at the
he
end.
He gets very angry.
And that's sort of a righteous, justifiable anger. But yeah, he is more... There's more going on with him, I guess, in this one than there is in the second one.
You know, that was really... Sometimes things just make absolutely no sense to me. Like the fucking broom handle. That was really bizarre as a Mauser 96.
What are you talking about?
Oh, the gun he gets shot with at the very end with
yeah.
the evil South African dude.
Yeah.
That evil South African dude's using a gun from, like, the 1890s. One of the very, very first semi-automatic weapons.
Oh,
and its nickname was the broom handle. And it's like, what the fuck? And, you know, it's sad that it's not sad, but that's just kind of the shit that I pick up on because I've always been really interested in history. And
you're a gun freak.
I have a
fetish about guns. That's fetish. What you were going to say.
You have a fetish. You have a gun fetish. no, it's, I like antique firearms.
Do you think that's just another screw-up on their part? Because, like you said, in the first one, they got the really blatant one that almost anyone would pick up on. Riggs,
not necessarily.
They show Riggs the close-up of this bullet that he's got saved
unless
for himself.
Unless you'd actually seen one, how would you know what a hollow point looks like, necessarily?
I would think a lot of people would just assume that it looks like what it says it is, and that's how it looks. It's the tip is hollowed out. It's
right.
Concave. And the bullet that they show in the close-up is not that. He calls it that later. He says
right,
it's a hollow
the bullet
point.
In the close-up is what's called a full metal jacket.
Yeah.
Which is lead coated in copper.
Mm-hmm.
And the copper is for more modern rifling in a bullet. It just...
it's slicker.
Well, lead can leave residue in the... Barrel.
Yeah, so it's a little harder, too.
Yeah, it's harder, which actually wears out barrels faster, but it's cleaner, and a lot of other things.
Makes sense. But, yeah, so maybe they just never got their shit together about the proper guns. Because that sounds like a real weird oversight to throw in there. To put a gun that's 100 years old or damn near in at the end.
It like, still works. It's just, it struck me as kind of odd.
Maybe it was a character thing they had to leave on the cutting room floor about the guy.
You know, it kind of made you wonder if it was like something he had on his wall.
Yeah.
Like in his office.
That's or what something. I meant, is maybe it was something like that.
But yeah, it just kind of fascinates me because anybody, there when you watch a movie, there are things that you see that other people don't.
Well, yeah,
I see things, historical inaccuracies. I see car shit. You know, I'll see gun things. I'll see airplane things, whatever. And most people don't notice because they don't know enough about the subject to know one way or the other.
Yeah, most people are stupid.
Well, it just kind of bugs me that somebody didn't take the time to research that, but I realize every little fucking thing can be difficult. But some directors...
Well, they have somebody... They list a whole huge amount of names at the end of all these movies, and of those, usually there's a couple people that should be worrying about things like that in the prop and design departments and whatnot.
Well, some people are just really... Like, I remember watching all that crap that came with American Gangster. And Ridley Scott is definitely
from design. He came from the advertising world, so he's acutely aware of things like that, visually things like that. So, and he's a good director. He's high end. Richard Donner, I guess he's pretty good. He did Superman and stuff, but I mean, I don't know if he ever did anything that was super high end. You know, the Lethal Weapon movies and Superman are kind of like dumb movie, you know, cop action movie. Comedy,
right? Did he ever? I think he's done some more serious stuff.
I'm trying to think. I'm sure he maybe did some stuff that was maybe more thriller, dramatic serious, but it just doesn't seem like...
Well, I was going to say he did Goonies, which wasn't serious.
Well, no, Goonies is another sort of movie.
And that wasn't real serious, but I really... That one always threw me because of the style. The style always made me think slightly
Tim Burton.
Tim Burton. I think a lot of that had to do with Danny Elfman's score, which just automatically makes you think.
Oh yeah,
you're watching a Tim Burton movie.
No, I mean honestly, it's sad to admit this, coming from my generation, but I can almost see how someone a handful of years younger than us could look at a film like the original Lethal Weapon and find it kind of ironically funny. I mean, when they're actually literally taking salt and scratching it onto Murtaugh's bullet wound, that's just sort of...
Why does that seem odd?
It's just...
Do you have any idea how bad? You've never gotten like some lemon juice or something or...
No. I know it's painful and stuff, but it's kind of funny too. You know what I mean? It's slapstick. It kind of is. And the thing with Endo is kind of slapstick. I mean, and then, of course, you got Riggs doing the Three Stooges stuff at the beginning, which is supposed to be funny. But I don't know. I almost feel like this movie does not stand the test of time as well as I would have liked it to.
Most 80s action movies don't.
Yeah,
I
guess.
You watch them because they're fun.
But Die Hard still does.
Die Hard was definitely more intense, but then... That was McTiernan?
I think the thing is, it's more about...
Is he, like, doing time? Or did he weasel out of that?
I don't know what happened with that. I don't really care.
But then again, the bad guys in Die Hard were definitely a lot more kick-ass, but they were serious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, they were some serious kick-ass. That's
the thing.
Trash.
You didn't get that. In this one, but it's clear that in Lethal Weapon, those are all merc guys. Those are badasses too, and they try to establish that by showing Mr. Joshua with the you know G. Gordon Liddy burning his arm thing. But it never really. I just feel like it failed to put itself together. And it's unfortunate.
Well, what sold the movie was fucking Mel Gibson and Danny Glover.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why there were sequels.
Yeah, and that's why I think they got it better in the second one. They had a more cohesive thread or of what was going on with the bad guys.
The second one definitely had cooler action.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, even the soundtrack was better. You had the George Harrison song and stuff.
The bad guy in the second one, that henchman, he was pretty fucking... He was definitely kind of creepy.
Yeah, definitely.
What are you looking at? Seeing if I'm stepping on plastic.
Yeah.
Something like that. That was a pretty good line.
Making sure I'm not standing on plastic. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'd have to give this like a 2.5, honestly.
Lethal Weapon? Shit. I'll give it a 3.5 just for Riggs. That's the quintessence. Between Mad Max and Martin Riggs were the quintessential 80s Mel Gibson movies. They're what made him.
Well, yeah, definitely. That's all there was to him. He did Gallipoli and stuff, but...
Right, that was early too.
Yeah. And he did that one about the group of farmers in the rain.
He did The River.
Yeah, The River.
With Sissy Spacek.
Sissy Spacek. Back to Lethal Weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what did you want to talk about?
I think you summed it up.
Did I now?
No, I was just saying that from a technical aspect, it wasn't the greatest movie, but...
Well, no, technically it looks good. It's got that one faux pas with the bullet, and then it's just got some... It's got some story
well,
problems.
Well, that's just kind of some very... That's just pretty ridiculous on my part.
No, it's not, actually. Because that's the sort of thing that if I stopped and thought about it for a second... Like, as soon as you said... You didn't even say what was wrong. I knew what you meant. When he's like, oh, the hollow point. And I'm like... And you're like, that always bothered me. And I'm like, yeah, because it's not, huh? And, you know, if I... Basically, I'm terrible at continuity and a lot of that stuff... In movie, because I watch a movie, I just sit down and I watch it. I don't pick apart the acting. I do a review about podcasts, so I do it after the fact. And sometimes when I'm watching a movie specifically to review it, I'll be a little more critical. But on like a first or second viewing, I'm just sort of watching it. And so when I do notice things, it means I'm out of the system, which means it's failing at drawing me in.
But just repeating that, as far as the buddy cop movie genre goes. Mel Gibson, Danny Glover definitely had it down.
They broke the mold. They really had it from the get-go.
And that kind of chemistry is what... That's what people come to see. I mean, all the other stuff...
It's more authentic, too. I mean, I've talked badly about the first one because I had certain problems with it. But really, the characters are not what I really have much of a problem with. And they both
imagine it wasn't a big budget.
It's not as ridiculous. Well, I don't know, they have some helicopters and stuff, and you know they had to shut down that part of LA.
It's like, well, how much? Just like 4 years later, how much was Terminator 2? That was like the first movie to break 100 million.
Probably,
I think.
Well, yeah, the visual.
And this movie, I'm thinking maybe 15.
No. Star Wars was made for 10 in 77.
Yeah,
10
you had all
earlier.
Those special effects. This has
They've
some
made
explosions.
A lot of that up as they go.
None of them were big explosions. They're not blowing up any fucking building.
I think the budget was probably bigger than 15 million, but we'll see. Who knows? It's something you need to see if you want to appreciate the whole buddy cop thing. You kind of need to get Lethal Weapon 1 and 2. I am not a big fan of the third one or the fourth one. I've only seen the third one like once. And I don't know what it is about it. I think it's because it tries to get kind of political with the social commentary on the gang violence and everything. And it's just not a very interesting bad... I think they screw up the bad guy thing again, too, in that one. And then the fourth one, it's another political kind of commentary thing about
I never saw it.
About, like, Asian immigrants, slavery, kind of, like, you know...
Which is definitely an issue.
Yeah, there are. They are. It's just... I don't know. Something about that second one, it was just, like, such a straightforward, like, you know... These guys are bad dudes,
South African.
Nasty.
Well, there were some serious politics going on in that one.
Of course there were.
The tuna fish.
Yeah.
That was great too.
When you're talking about how it had all the dolphin in it.
Yeah.
All the brains.
The brains? What?
It's brain food because of all the dolphin.
Oh. Yeah, dolphins are smart, aren't they?
I don't know. You have to eat one to find out. Take its soul.
Can you eat the soul? How do you eat a soul?
You eat a brain. That's all there is to a soul.
Well, what about the second brain?
The gut brain?
Yep.
That's all just like autonomic nerve type stuff. That's not that isn't involved well, in con- that isn't involved in consciousness. Your brain is a collection of synapses.
What about intuition?
Your soul is a collection of synapses. That's also synapses. Boom! Just blew your mind and completely elucidated the and demystified the soul.
Lights on, lights off, like fucking Light Bright. That's what I'm thinking.
Light Bright?
Light Bright.
Turn on the lights and see it shine.
Tonight?
Tonight.
Yep, like my tree.
Nice, it's sparkling. Yeah, Merry Christmas from the Feudal Podcast, guys.
Merry Christmas, unless you're like a commie.
Dabney. Fuck you too, Dabney.